Blog Talk Radio. Hello, this is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show, designed to help women overcome polycystic ovarian syndrome, a hormonal and reproductive disorder that affects 1 in 10 women of childbearing age. We'll be bringing you the best information on fertility, hirsutism, weight loss, nutrition, mental health, and other conditions surrounding PCOS. The goal of the PCOS Challenge is to inspire and motivate you to make positive changes in your life. So tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. This is Sasha Adi. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge. Hello everyone, this is Sasha Adi, host of the PCOS Challenge radio show and also the PCOSChallenge.com social and networking site. Today we have Travis Johnson of Chiral Balance, and he's here to share with us a few things about D-chiral inositol as well as other natural remedies for PCOS. Travis attended the University of Texas, earning both his bachelor's and master's degree in biochemistry. He now teaches general chemistry and biochemistry there. While in graduate school, he spent much of his spare time reading literature about PCOS. His interest intensified when he discovered that a few family members were struggling with PCOS, and it intensified even further when he saw a real opportunity to provide a needed product to the PCOS community. He and his mother started Chiral Balance to sell D-chiral inositol, opening their doors in December 2005 and becoming the first retail distributor of D-chiral inositol in the world. I encourage you to grab a piece of paper, pen, and also to join us in the chat room if you have any questions or comments for Travis. Travis, welcome to the PCOS Challenge radio show.
Thanks, Sasha.
So you started Chiral Balance. Could you tell us a little bit more about your background surrounding Chiral Balance?
Sure, absolutely. So as you already mentioned, I got my master's degree in biochemistry, and when I was in grad school, I did read a lot of PCOS-related literature. And then I was really, really surprised to discover that a couple of my cousins have PCOS, and I was surprised for a couple of reasons. One, I just never would have guessed, even after having read all the literature, that either of my cousins had this. And then second, that it was never really brought up that I had to mention that I'd been, you know, reading the literature before they were willing to say anything to me. Mm. And so even among family members, it apparently wasn't something that was being discussed. And I found that was kind of the case in the PCOS community at large. So I really like what support groups like yours are doing, helping connect women and get everybody talking about this, because it's a very prevalent health issue, and yet it's one that is often overlooked by traditional medicine. And then as I was reading all this literature, I discovered that there was a body of evidence that this little small molecule called D-chiral inositol was very, very important in PCOS and probably could be used to help alleviate the symptoms of PCOS if it was made available to the women who needed it. And so that's why my mother and I started Chiral Balance. We decided it to sell D-chiral inositol to the PCOS population here in the U.S.
Well, that's great. And yes, you mentioned that many people don't talk about PCOS, mm-hmm. and that is so true. You know, even when I was first diagnosed, that no one knew, you know. And I think a lot of people have issues speaking about PCOS because nobody knows about it, you know. The
right,
community at large, no one, you know, we'll be able to identify with them. So, you know, what's the use of talking about something that nobody knows about? At least that's the mentality.
That is the mentality.
Of many
people.
That is
the mentality. Even among, you know, medical professionals, I read a pretty disturbing statistic in the New England Journal of Medicine about 2 years ago that the average woman will see no less than six doctors before getting a PCOS diagnosis.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a ridiculous number of referrals to get a correct diagnosis for something as prevalent as PCOS.
I totally agree with you. Well, can you tell us what dechiroinositol is?
Yeah, I can do that. So the literature out there would suggest what they did, the original work found that women with PCOS didn't excrete any DCI in their urine. And everybody else, the rest of the population, men and then women that don't have PCOS, excreted a pretty reliable, typical amount. There was a nice average there. And so that suggested that their bodies weren't making it or were maybe metabolizing it into something else. But that, you know, to the people doing this research, it suggested it, you know, it merited further investigation. And then they did two studies, one in 99 and one in 2002, where they administered DCI to women with PCOS and saw pretty dramatic results. And the model that they came up with was that because DCI is used in insulin signal transduction, mm-hmm. which is this cascade of steps that allows the cells of your body to respond to insulin. So because it's involved in that, if it's deficient, you wind up insulin resistant. And insulin resistance is a very common symptom of PCOS, so that all started to kind of make sense and come together. And then that insulin resistance causes the fecal cells of the ovary to overproduce testosterone. So because insulin's always high, and it doesn't have to be very high, it can even be high normal, but if it's like that all the time, if it never comes down, the fecal cells will always be overproducing testosterone. And then the high testosterone is what leads to the majority of the visible signs and symptoms of PCOS. So, and then supplementing with DCI allows you to correct that deficiency.
Oh, okay. So the DCI, is this natural? Is it, you know, safe for people?
That's actually a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is what I always point out to people when I get that question. This isn't something that's abundant in your diet. There aren't a lot of foods you can get this from. You could eat a pound of orange peel a day, or you could eat buckwheat farinetta every day. I mean, there are plants that this is prevalent in, or soy husks for that matter, which is what we extract it from. So you can get it from food, but the fact that people actually excrete more than they consume, the average American excretes more than they consume, that means your body's making it. So this mm-hmm. is something that's very much a part of your natural, healthy metabolism. Your body needs this. Your body makes this. And if it's not making it, then it's probably crying out for it in a way. And it's definitely healthy, definitely safe, and definitely natural. It's about as natural as you know, things get. I'd say it's right up there with vitamin C. You know, you got to get it from your diet in some cases. And it's something your body wants and needs. So
in order, if your body's not making the dechiroinositol, can we eat a huge amount of soy or buckwheat farinetta and get it this way? How much of it would we have to eat to get the amount that our body needs?
So buckwheat farinetta, the numbers I've seen are anywhere from a quarter of a cup to a cup of buckwheat farinetta a day. That would amount to like making a batch of muffins and having four or five muffins over the course of the day. And I remember I even found on one of the discussion boards a few years ago a recipe for what were called PCOS blaster muffins, and they incorporated a lot of buckwheat farinetta, which you can buy from I think a company called Mindac Farms that's based out of Minnesota and North Dakota. So there's
okay.
definitely dietary sources for DCI, but you've got to really commit to eating, you know, substantial amounts of very particular foods on a daily basis.
Okay, so I got a lot of questions for you surrounding Pinitol.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people I guess they've heard of it, and I guess some even went to naturopathic doctors and who suggested this. The question for you is, what's the difference between D-chiro-inositol and D-pinitol?
That's a good question, and I get that one a lot too. D-pinitol, and this gets a little bit technical, but the difference, unfortunately, is just a technical one. D-pinitol has what's called a methyl group on it. It's got an extra carbon stuck on it. Now, that means it's not biologically active in the way that you know, you and I need. It's not usable in something like insulin signal transduction. But in most people, there's an enzyme that'll take that methyl group off. It'll take that D-pinitol and turn it into D-chiro-inositol. But the important, you know, step here, the disconnect here, is that D-pinitol is already abundant in your diet. That's in a ton of foods. That's in pretty much any vegetable matter that you eat. There's pinitol there. And so if that enzyme were working in every member of the population, that enzyme responsible for turning D-pinitol into D-chiro-inositol, then we wouldn't ever see D-chiro-inositol deficiency. So it's my personal suspicion that a little genetic study might reveal that a lot of women with PCOS have either a dysfunctional or an absent demethylase that's responsible for turning pinitol into D-chiro-inositol. So
is pinitol as important as D-chiro-inositol?
I'd say you know, it's not a bad starting place. You know, for maybe you know, everybody's a little bit different, and there's, you know, everybody's genes are a little bit different, and maybe that enzyme doesn't work as well in some people, and maybe all you really need to do is kind of overload yourself on pinitol to get that enzyme to do what it needs to do, and that could work for some people. The only caveat there is that there are not a lot of commercial sources of D-pinitol, and you know, gram for gram, they're typically more expensive than DCI for whatever reason. And also, again, that's one of those things that's easy to get from food. If you want plenty of pinitol in your diet, you know, eat some soy. There's tons of pinitol in soybeans. So.
Wow. Okay. Another question, it was about inositol. You know, I saw inositol in a local vitamin sales place, and I was wondering, so what's the difference between inositol and D-chiro-inositol?
That's another really good question. So inositol typically, in common usage, refers to the whole family of inositol. There's 128 altogether. Only 11 of them are relevant to people. And then what's sold over the counter is typically myo-inositol. And myo-inositol is what's called an epimer of DCI, of D-chiro-inositol. And that means it's a very, very small difference. Two of the atoms are arranged a little bit differently. That's all that means. And so they're very closely related chemically. And there's an enzyme in humans that will turn myo-inositol into D-chiro-inositol. And so there's a lot of routes to get to almost any human metabolite. There's a lot of ways to build it. Very few things only have one route to them. They're all sort of interconnected. It's a very large web. And so over-the-counter inositol is typically myo, and myo can be turned into DCI in principle. So again, that's another instance where it might be worthwhile to try and kind of overload on myo inositol and see if that doesn't help.
But what we really want is that end product, D-chiro-inositol.
Right, and your body uses myo inositol for lots of important things. Also, that's also an important component in insulin signal transduction as well. But myo inositol, again, that's something that's dietarily abundant. Any sort of meat, myo actually means muscle. It's the inositol found in muscles. So it's, you know, myo inositol is very, very abundant in meat.
Right. So I should mention that I have a wonderful video that I gained from Travis explaining these things. It's on the PCOS Challenge website. Can you tell us just a little bit, give us an overview of that video, Travis?
Okay, yeah. So the video walks through the steps in insulin signal transduction and explains how the body responds to insulin and why it makes insulin. And then it explains how myo-inositol and dechiro-inositol are really used to do two separate things during insulin signal transduction. DCI is what tells the cells of the body to burn sugar or to store sugar in the case of a fat cell. And then and then myo-inositol is what tells fecal cells to make testosterone. So if you don't have the DCI there, you never actually start burning that sugar the way you're supposed to, using that sugar up, which means your insulin's high all the time, which means the myo-inositol, which is probably still there because it's very dietarily abundant, is always telling the fecal cells, make testosterone, make testosterone, make testosterone.
Wow. And that's what...
I'm really, really, really proud of it, and I got to work with... I got to give a shout out to them because they're both listening. I have to work with my big sister who did the voiceover, and my good friend Leah who did all the animation. So.
Oh yeah, it's a really, really great video, and I'd like everyone to check it out. I'm sure, is it on the Chiral Balance website?
It's on the
well?
Chiral Balance website. Mm-hmm. It's also on YouTube. If you'll just search PCOS, and it's also on a site called Vimeo, which you can also search just PCOS, and it'll come up.
And it's on the PCOSChallenge.com website.
Okay.
I do have some other questions. One is, how does chiral balance create DCI?
Okay. So we buy from a manufacturer called Amicogen, and they take soy husks and carob husks, both of which have a lot of DCI in them. And they do one of the cleanest, most natural ways to get something like DCI out of a plant matter. They basically put it through a giant blender with a whole bunch of water, and then they dump several volumes of ethanol in there, lots and lots of alcohol in there, and that actually causes the DCI to precipitate. It causes it to solidify out of the solution, and then they just filter everything, dry it, rinse it a few times, and run it through what's called an HPLC, which is high-performance liquid chromatography, and they run it through an HPLC, a very, very large one, to purify it for us. So the end product is very, very pure DCI. There's a little bit of pentanol in there. There's a little bit of myo-inositol in there, but it's at least 98% DCI, and then that's what we put into capsules and sell as a finished product to our customers.
Okay, and is Chiral Balance still the only company you know that sells dechiro-inositol?
I think there's one other retailer in the U.S. now. I think they started sometime last year, I think around December. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I go to my doctor, will I be able to, will he know about DCI?
If you're very, very lucky, your doctor will know about it. But I'd say, as with most nutritional approaches or supplemental approaches or herbal approaches to health, your average doctor is both ignorant of them and generally pretty leery of them. They're very mistrustful of things like this. So, I'm always surprised to discover that, you know, I'll get an email from the customer and she'll tell me that, you know, my doctor did know all about it. He participated in some study, you know, such and such years ago. So I'm always surprised to find out how well known it is in the medical community. And there was a very large pharmaceutical company called Insmed that was interested in DCI for a few years back in the early 2000s, and I think that might have something to do with why so many doctors do know about it.
Okay, and someone in the chat room, Misty, is asking if it's available in Canada.
It is. We can ship to Canada. We have to do a little bit more paperwork, and I think I think it was Canadian Bill C-60 or something, which is probably going to pass sometime in the next parliament session, and that will make it illegal for us. So that might not.
Illegal.
Yeah, but Canada's really going to clamp down on. There's a very likely to pass bill that is going to reclassify all nutritional supplements, vitamins and minerals included. I mean, you know, vitamin C or some potassium. That's all. Those are all going to be reclassified as drugs. You'll need a prescription from your doctor. Distribution will be monitored in the same way that it is for drug companies. So And that's a very, that unfortunately, very likely to pass. There's a lot of momentum for that bill right now. But for the time being, yes, we can sell in Canada. And then if that bill passes, our recourse for our Canadian customers will be to go through their application process, which has about a 60% refusal rate to be allowed to sell a nutritional supplement.
Oh, okay. Misty said, uh-oh. So, yeah, oh, that's... unfortunate, I guess, but
it is unfortunate. There's a fair amount of grassroots resistance to the bill in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and my best guess is what we'll see happen is that after it's passed and people then realize how deeply it impacts their life, I think there'll be a substantial backlash, and the Canadian Parliament will wind up doing a little backstepping. So.
Okay. So. You know, we mentioned going to the doctor. Is there any information that I should know beforehand to take to my doctor, you know, to see if he'd be more receptive?
Definitely. In fact, most doctors don't ask what sorts of, you know, nutritional supplements their patients are taking. And so they don't know, they just don't, they're kind of in the dark on that, and they'll occasionally prescribe things that'll have drugs that will have interactions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good to say, you know, these are the things I'm taking, and here's why I'm taking them. And, you know, from our website, for instance, we've got there's a link that says doctor leaflet right on the front page. And you can click that, and you can print out, it's a nice one-page PDF that summarizes about, you know, five or six relevant research papers that were published in, like, the New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of Endocrinology and things like that. And that's something you can share with your doctor just to give them a little bit of information to help them help you make an informed decision about whether to incorporate DCI into your regimen.
Okay. Yeah, and I did read quite a few of those research articles. And what I did also read was that D-chiroinositol is in the B group vitamin.
It's technically vitamin B10. Which
oh,
is for
okay.
B vitamins you've never heard of because it's not an essential nutrient.
Okay.
Although
okay.
obviously for some people it's pretty essential.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so a few weeks ago I had an herbalist on the radio show, and he mentioned that B6 is a good, it's probably good for women who are suffering from kind of like emotional or PMS type
mm-hmm.
symptoms. And so what do you think about that?
I think there's a lot of merit to that. I think a lot of the B vitamins are very, very important in different metabolic pathways that produce, you know, hormones and neurotransmitters. So having, you know, plenty of whatever you need on hand to make, you know, to make that dopamine or to make that serotonin or make that melatonin or make whatever it is that you need, you know, make whatever it is that you need. Having all that on hand for your body to use, I think, is very important. And I think especially with the water-soluble B vitamins, it'd be hard to make an argument not to supplement with them. You know, very few of them have any sort of overdose symptoms, and even then you have to take ridiculous amounts to get there. So
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, responsible use of like a multi-B, something like that is going to be good for not just with PCOS, but the population at large. Well, I was just going to say, as far as a sort of a nutritional approach to dealing with symptoms of, you know, emotional distress and depressed and other things that often are associated with PCOS, the average American is actually very surprisingly very, very marginal in magnesium. And so supplementing with something as inexpensive and easy to find as magnesium citrate is a very good way to help level your mood, and it also just really boosts your energy levels. It's something your muscles need to contract properly. So magnesium, I always recommend magnesium citrate to everybody I know, no matter what their problem is.
And, you know, as you may know, that many women with a PCOS may have mood disturbances, so it might be something to look into.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And there's actually a lot of other nutritional supplements that are, you know, that can be useful in PCOS. There's other insulin sensitizers like chromium.
Mm-hmm.
That's very effective. You want to take the polynicotinate, not any of the other forms. Polynicotinate's the most absorbable. And then there's also what's called epigallocatechingalate, which is a mouthful, but it's one of the active ingredients in green tea extract. And so that's a very, very potent insulin sensitizer. And it's also, I mean, if you look up something like epigallocatechingalate on PubMed, I'm always stunned.
Okay, let's abbreviate that to EGCG for people.
It is a mouthful. EGCG is, there have been, five dozen good in vitro studies in the last year alone, and they prevent, cancer cell growth, and they slow tumor proliferation. I mean, it's a really, really remarkable natural substance, and it's so easy to get too. I mean, green tea extract you can get in any health food store. So I always recommend green tea extract to people as well.
Oh, I have a few more questions about the DCAR or inositol.
Sure,
like, how long would a person have to take DCI?
So, to see the most immediate changes will be for women that monitor their insulin or monitor their blood sugar. You'll see those start to come down within the first few days. You'll see an improvement in mood probably in about 2 weeks. And then the longer-term effects, all the symptoms of elevated testosterone can take 6 to 8 weeks to start improving. So for that acne to start to clear up, and for that, disrupted ovulatory cycle to sort of resume nice normal period, that can take, 6 to 8 weeks to start happening. And then as long as you take it, and it's important to take it consistently, like missing a week is, you're basically going to be starting over. So it's important to take it regularly. But as long as you take it regularly, you'll continue to experience those benefits.
How much should people take? Is there some sort of guideline?
There is, and it depends. It depends primarily on weight. The studies suggested 10 to 20 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, and what that boils down to for people that work in pounds is if you weigh less than about 130 pounds, 600 milligrams a day should be plenty, and if you weigh more than that, you're going to want to take 1,200 milligrams a day. And then that actually comes in increments of 130. So if you weigh, 260 pounds or more, you're going to want to take, 1,800.
Okay.
And so on.
Is it FDA approved?
That's a very good question. So the FDA can't approve nutritional supplements. Since our product is a human metabolite and it's taken orally, it's actually covered by the DSHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act of 94. And all the FDA can really do is tell us what we can and can't put on our label, which they've definitely done. but they can't. All they can do with nutritional supplements is approve statements that can be made about them. So they can approve statements made about orange juice that vitamin C is good for colds or something like that, as an example. So we're not FDA approved, I guess, is the short answer.
You mentioned side effects earlier, and I have a question here from Heather, and she took D-chiro-inositol from Chiral Balance, and she said that's the only thing that helped her to get a menstrual flow.
Okay.
And pretty much she's asking, is there any evidence that it also shows promise for things like acne, hair loss, et cetera, which I think you just mentioned, but you can answer that question.
Well, I do want to elaborate on that. And now that you asked that question, so in the studies they were going for very quantitative, measurable things. You can draw a sample of blood and see how much insulin somebody's got at any given moment. So in all the studies, they're measuring things like that, and it's hard to evaluate things like hair loss and acne in a very quantitative way. But anything that's going to reduce your testosterone and all of those sort of real physical changes are the result of elevated testosterone. So anything that brings your testosterone level down is going to start to address those. I would probably be misleading people if I said it could reverse any sort of hair loss associated with PCOS, but it'll definitely slow it down, maybe stop it if it brings your testosterone down far enough. And other testosterone-related things like acne will also help improve that.
Okay. And do you personally know of anything else that is helpful for lowering testosterone in PCOS women?
Yeah, any insulin sensitizer, anything that, because it's my firm belief, and I think there's sort of an emerging consensus in the medical community as well, that the ultimate origin of PCOS is a very low grade but very systematic insulin resistance. And so I think anything like chromium or epigallocatechin gallate or cinnamon powder, those things are all, D3, if you take enough vitamin D, that can be helpful in insulin response as well. So all of those things, and then obviously, the stuff that everybody already knows about, like exercise and diet, anything that helps keep your insulin low is also going to help keep your testosterone low for women that have PCOS.
Okay. Yeah, but it's also important to know that especially supplements and herbal remedies, they don't work overnight. So I don't think you'll be able to see results within a week. I'm not sure about this, but I do believe that you have to be consistently taking whatever you're prescribed for a period of time before you'll start to actually see results.
Definitely. All the longitudinal studies with chromium, for instance, have shown that you need to take it for a good 6 months straight before you start to actually realize all those benefits.
Is DCI safe to take during pregnancy?
So that's a very, very good question. And the short answer is I don't know, because it's never been evaluated during pregnancy. But it's, again, one of those things where you need to sit down with your doctor and weigh some pros and cons. So the one of the big issues is it safe for a developing fetus? The answer is probably yes. It's something your body makes and uses as the course of its normal metabolism. Even a little teeny tiny fetus is making, and then, once it's, bigger and more baby looking, is even, making dechiroinositol, assuming all of its enzymes are working properly. And so that's a part of its healthy metabolism, probably not a risk to the baby. And then I also, I've had a few customers who have gone ahead and taken it during pregnancy, and they haven't reported any ill effects. There's even, I think, one lady told her story about that on one of the PCOS message boards. I don't remember which one.
Okay.
But then another important factor, and again, there's a lot of ways to address this. So I don't just want to plug my product because it's a little more serious than all that. But insulin resistance during pregnancy increases the risk for the mother developing gestational diabetes, which is can be very difficult to deal with and can lead to serious complications. It increases the risk of miscarriage in the first trimester, so you can lose the baby very early on if you're insulin resistant. And it also increases the risk, after the first trimester, once you're in the safe area, it increases the risk of high birth weight, which can result in a very difficult labor. So all these things are very compelling reasons to address the insulin resistance that's underlying in PCOS. And what you'll see in a lot of women is that once they do conceive and their hormones are dictated essentially by the pregnancy, that their insulin and blood sugar levels all return to normal, their testosterone comes back down to normal. But for women that don't, it's very, very important to deal with that insulin resistance, whether you do that with metformin prescribed to you by your doctor or whether you do that with DCI. Again, it's something, it's a decision you have to sit down and make, with your medical professional.
Okay.
It's very important to deal. I want to reiterate, it's very important to deal with insulin resistance during pregnancy.
Right. And so is it okay to take DCI in combination with an insulin sensitizer such as Glucophage or Metformin?
That's absolutely okay, yeah. Many, many of our customers do that. They find that they work better together than they do apart, for instance. Mm-hmm. And the important thing is that, DCI can't cause hypoglycemia. It can't make your blood sugar go too low, and neither can metformin. And both of them working together, even working together, it's a very synergistic relationship. They complement each other. And so for women who can tolerate metformin, it's actually probably a good idea to go ahead and take both.
There's another question. She's a teen. This is Kara, and she's a teen who wants to know what she should do because she's younger and really doesn't know much. She wants to know a great first step to deal with her PCOS as a teenager.
I would say that she's already taken a pretty good first step, which is taking responsibility for her own health by engaging in the PCOS community. But a second first step is just start reading as much about it as you can. There's a lot of information out there, some of it good, some of it not so good. But get interested and get informed and seek the advice of other women who've been dealing with it for longer. And really pin down what your symptoms are. You know, PCOS presents itself very differently in different individuals. Some women, you know, really struggle with the acne. Some women really struggle with being overweight. Some really struggle with the weight loss. So how it affects an individual can vary dramatically, and you're going to want to find some woman dealing with the same symptoms and see if she can't give you some good advice. But I'd say, you know, just being as interested as you are in your own health, being a health your own best health advocate is the first and most important step you can take in dealing with any health issue.
Absolutely. And seeking medical advice, even though there are many doctors who don't know that much about PCOS, there are, you know, quite a few who actually do know about PCOS and are trying to learn as much as they can. Mm-hmm. So it's also very important to seek medical advice. And don't give up. That's what it means to be an advocate. Don't give up. Even if the first six doctors you see, like Travis said earlier, it takes an average of six doctors for many women to get diagnosed. If the first six doctors you see have no clue or aren't that helpful, you know, don't give up and try to seek people in the medical community who can help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely do. And, you know, hit those message boards. Ask, you know, find somebody in your area and see who they see. And I know, for instance, on the PCOS community board, there's a section that does nothing but list good doctors state by state for dealing with PCOS. So find a doctor in your area, you know, and work with that doctor.
Do you know much about N-acetylcysteine for PCOS?
Yeah, N-acetylcysteine is great. So especially for a couple trying to conceive, I think a common frontline therapy these days is clomiphene citrate, which can produce what's called, a rebound ovulation. And N-acetylcysteine in conjunction with clomiphene dramatically increases the likelihood of both ovulating and actually successful conception, you know, fertilization and implantation. So I would strongly recommend that anybody that's going to do a clomiphene trial talk with their doctor about N-acetylcysteine, go buy some, and start taking it a few days before the clomiphene trial begins.
Yeah, and where can people get these?
Something like N-acetylcysteine you can get from any major company like Pure Encapsulation. They're another web-based company like us, but they don't specialize so much. They do all the common vitamins and some of the more common herbals. And I'm confident that they would have something like N-acetylcysteine.
Okay. Our caller is back. We lost you there.
Yes, I don't know what happened.
Okay.
Anyway, I was asking about any more recent studies. Done on the DCI.
Yeah, there haven't been any. Well, so there was one more recent study. There was a very, very large phase 2 trial performed by InSmed Pharmaceuticals. They recruited a 1,500 woman cohort. That's an enormous and expensive study to do, and it was going to be a year long. They cut it off about 9 months in, and publicly, their statement was that DCI didn't achieve statistical significance in its primary metrics, which is pharmaceutical speak for it didn't work the way they expected it to. And that didn't personally surprise me. InSmed Pharmaceuticals did poured a substantial amount of money into getting what I would call a backdoor patent on DCI. They had a couple of use patents. They had a few different production patents. But ultimately, patenting a human metabolite to treat that metabolite's deficiency is not the sort of thing that's going to hold up in court. And privately, one of the InSmed reps admitted that it was essentially a financial decision. If they couldn't guarantee financial rights to sale, then they were never going to recuperate their investment. So that's why they pulled the plug on the project. What's that? Go ahead.
What are you hearing personally for your company? from your customers?
Return customers, I'd say about 80% of first-time customers become long-term customers. So that suggests to me that it's working for them. I get, I'd say, you know, at least once or twice a week, I get an unsolicited positive email with, you know, something to the effect of, this has helped this or that symptom, or occasionally something a little more glowing, like this is the only thing that's ever worked for me. I've never had a cycle in 6 years, and finally I'm ovulating. Sometimes I'll get messages like that. And surprisingly, I'll hear things like, I've had two customers in the past 3 years email me to let me know that it helped with their insomnia as well, which, I mean, again, I can't think of a reason why that should be the case, but I'm not the sort to look a gift horse in the mouth. But PCOS is a very, very complicated and multifactorial syndrome. It's not, I doubt very much that it has a single genetic component or a single environmental factor that contributes to its development. I think it's a lot more complicated than that. And so I would be very, very surprised if DCI turned out to work for everybody. In fact, I'm gonna go right out there and say there's no way it's gonna work for everybody. And as a consequence of that, we like to offer on any customer that registers with us, we like to offer them a money-back guarantee on their first order. If you don't feel like it does anything for you in the first 2 months, you just return it to us, the unused portion or the empty bottle, and we'll give you a full refund on that first order.
You do feel like within 2 months you should be able to tell some kind of difference.
I'd say that if you're taking it correctly, if you're taking it every day like you're supposed to, and you're taking an appropriate dosage, if you haven't seen any sort of improvement by the end of 8 weeks, then you're going to be one of the people that doesn't respond to it. It's just not going to work for you.
If you don't weigh over, let's say if you weigh under 130 and you take two of the DCIs, would you expect quicker results?
No, this is one of those things where definitely DCI is what we call dose dependent, so taking more can increase the effect, but whatever effects you experience, they're going to max out somewhere. Basically, DCI is going to return your hormone profile to normal, and whatever normal is for you. You know, there's a wide range of normal among ladies, and so it's going to return that to normal, and that's going to take 6 to 8 weeks. No matter how much you're taking, assuming you're taking enough. So I guess I would call that a threshold effect. As you're taking enough, if you're taking that bare minimum amount, anything beyond that is going to be extra. You don't need that. So if you're under that 130-pound cutoff, I would say stick with 600 milligrams a day for 2 months, and if you don't see any improvement, it's just not going to work for you.
Okay. And do you see any problem using it with the natural progesterone cream?
No, I think progesterone cream is a great idea for PCOS. One of the biggest health issues, long-term health issues in PCOS is that if it goes untreated, your chronically low progesterone puts you at a much greater risk of developing endometrial cancer. So the topical progesterone cream is a great idea. I think if you're not on oral contraceptive pill, I think you should definitely be using topical progesterone.
And do you ever hear that the DCI is helping with weight loss?
I've never actually had a customer report that. I've had a couple say that their energy level goes up and their appetite goes down, and that enables them to lose the weight. But the DCI itself actually promoting weight loss, I think all DCI is going to do is give you that energy and give you the mood to get out there and lose weight, you know, the only way people really can, which is amounts to calorie deficits, so diet and exercise. But it's going to make diet and exercise actually work for a change, because I think most women with PCOS can agree that dieting and exercise just doesn't work for them.
And if it's helping your body use the insulin better.
Oh, yeah,
like
actually burning those calories, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That should maybe help with that.
Definitely.
Okay, well, I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
I have some more questions from our chat room. Kara, the teen, she was asking if it's inherited. I did tell her that there are studies being conducted now that suggest that it may be genetic, PCOS may be genetic. What's your take on that?
My take is that we're going to find that there's you know, as there is with a lot of health issues, there's a genetic predisposition to it, but that there's also environmental triggers that contribute to it. So we can, you know, the prevalence of PCOS in the U.S. has been increasing steadily for the past 70 years since they started keeping statistics, which were probably pretty unreliable back in the 30s now that I think about it. But since they started keeping statistics, you know, on the surface anyways, it would appear that the prevalence of DCI keeps going up and up and up. And I think I doubt that, you know, the prevalence of any particular genes are actually increasing in the population. So it's probably some environmental triggers. And I think it's probably, you know, things like the quality of diet that we have today. We eat, you know, we eat plants that are grown from very depleted soils, so we don't get any of our trace minerals. And we tend to, I guess the catchphrase is overfed and undernourished. We tend to eat more food than we need, and it tends to be very, you know, unhealthful food as a society. And so I think things like that are contributing to an increase in the prevalence of PCOS. But as far as the genetic component, definitely. There's definitely going to, I don't see any way around that. And there's even, you know, for families that have a lot of PCOS, there's even, you know, a speculative male phenotype, which is elevated testosterone in men and premature hair loss, which for a man is not really, you know, it's not life-changing. It doesn't affect his ability to have children. You know, it's not really not a big deal at all. He goes bald when he's 18 instead of when he's 28. It's not a big deal. So I think there's definitely a genetic component to it. And I think as soon as those studies start to get done, I think once they find the genes, you know, that they need to look at really and find the right genes to look at, they're going to start seeing, you know, little polymorphisms here and there that correlate to PCOS pretty strongly. So.
Okay. We have a dolphin lover who wanted the neck. So she wanted to know what the neck was for again. And if it's okay to take with DCI.
N-acetylcysteine is fine to take with DCI. The NAC is fine to take with DCI.
Mm-hmm.
What it's really for, based on all the studies, I'd say its most obvious use, its best use, would be in conjunction with clomiphene citrate. And clomiphene is administered to couples that are trying to conceive. It's administered to the women that are trying to conceive, rather. It produces what's called a rebound ovulation. It changes your hormones a little bit, and then once you come off it, you get that ovulatory cycle, and then that's, you kind of get this, you know, nice, you know, few day window where you have a, you know, the, at least the possibility of conceiving because you're ovulating for a change. But N-acetylcysteine makes the clomiphene more effective, so you're more likely to actually have that ovulation after you stop the clomiphene trial, and then you're also more likely to successfully implant, so that the fertilized egg actually, you know, reaches the wall of the uterus and implants and starts to develop into a baby. So N-acetylcysteine is a great thing if you're taking clomiphene.
Okay. Do you know about Glumetza?
Glumetza is another, it's what we would call a second generation insulin sensitizer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it does the same thing as metformin. It addresses the same health issue as metformin. And I haven't read any studies on Glumetza yet, and I haven't seen any interesting reports in the, you know, in the community forums from people that are actually taking it. So that's something I don't have a strong opinion or any particular knowledge on Glumetza yet, but it's definitely something I'm gonna look into in the near future.
Okay, but essentially, if you're taking that, you'd also be able to take DCI in conjunction with that.
Absolutely, any insulin sensitizers that you want to. Well, there's a caution there, actually. Some drugs that address insulin resistance do so by kind of short-circuiting the whole thing. They act in insulin's place, and that can be very dangerous. Mm-hmm. I would definitely ask my doctor what the mechanism for Glumetza is and see if it's an insulin mimetic. Is it tricking your body into responding to insulin, or is it just an insulin sensitizer? If it's an insulin mimetic, I would say you need to be careful about adding DCI to your regimen. But if it's an insulin sensitizer like metformin is, then, you know, go ahead.
What about saw palmetto?
So saw palmetto, this is interesting. It's been used for years by men to treat what's called BPH, which is, you know, benign prostatic histiopathy. More recently, it's gained a little bit of use in the premenopausal and menopausal community for dealing with symptoms of menopause. And that's because what it does, well, one of, it does two things primarily. It actually inhibits two enzymes, which are 5-alpha reductase and aromatase enzyme. And those two enzymes together are primarily responsible for converting all of your what are called prohormones. So they're these chemical, well, they're natural human metabolites, so maybe chemical is the wrong word to use. But they're in your blood, and so what your body turns into testosterone or turns into estrogen. So it's what your body makes all of your sex hormones from. And so it can actually turn down production of those precursors, and, you know, less DHEAS means less testosterone and less estrogen. So that's a little bit of a double-edged sword. But bringing that testosterone level down is definitely a good thing. And then it also turns down aromatase, which is what's responsible for converting estrogen and what's converting between estrogen and testosterone. And so that's kind of a mass action effect. And if you can get that testosterone level low enough, you can get the ratio of estrogen to testosterone back where it needs to be. So there's no good studies out there about this yet, but I would say based on its mechanism of action and the traction that it's gaining in the menopausal community, I would say that we're going to start seeing more saw palmetto being used by women dealing with PCOS, and probably successfully, if I had to guess. And it's certainly one of those things that isn't going to hurt anybody. So it's harmless if you don't need it.
Okay. And so besides the ones that we've mentioned today, are there any other supplements that you would perhaps suggest for women with PCOS to look, at least research?
Yeah, definitely. I would suggest researching what's called Vitex, and it has a lot of other names. It's Vitex. It's also called Chasteberry, and it's also called Agnus Castus, which is its scientific name. But you'll see that on you know, bottle labels in health stores too. So you can look for any of those things. Vitex is probably the most popular, and it's the shortest name for sure. And it actually has been shown clinically to increase estrogen levels. And that's not quite as good as bringing the testosterone down, but again, to an extent, it's that ratio that matters. So getting your estrogen up is definitely a good thing. And it can also improve FSH and LH secretion, so your body will make more follicle-stimulating hormone and more luteinizing hormone, and that can help stimulate a regular ovulatory cycle as well. And so that's something I recommend on an individual basis that women with PCOS look into and see if it's right for them.
So what's the safest way to take DCI? Do you have to take it with food, you know, before a meal, after a meal?
Good question. The mm-hmm. best way to take it is, so in the studies it was administered in the morning before food. And so I always recommend that to our customers in the morning before food, because that's just how it was done in the studies. And it's best to, they had very good results, so it's best to just do it that way. The most important thing I would say is to make sure you take it every day, and also to take it at the same time every day, because you don't want there's going to be the DCI gets turned into DCI itself is very short lived in the body. If you're not using it, it's rapidly excreted in the urine. But DCI gets converted into some very long-lived intermediates, and those are the molecules that are actually used in insulin signal transduction. So you want to get that supply of DCI. You want to get that stored up early in the day, so that as you're going through your day and as you're eating your meals and your blood sugar's coming up and your insulin's coming up, you've got that store of molecules there ready to respond to the insulin. So definitely, you know, I'd say first thing in the day, and take it with a big glass of water. I occasionally, get emails from customers that say it gives them a headache or it makes them dizzy, and the headache is simply a, in my opinion anyways, a consequence of being marginal for hydration, so you're just not very well hydrated at the moment. And then you take a big pill full of a water-soluble vitamin, and suddenly your body thinks, oh, you know, we got to clamp down on water usage, and that often produces a headache. And so take it with, at least 8 ounces of water. That's what I recommend. And then the dizziness is essentially the same issue. It's what's called orthostatic hypotension. It's where you stand up and suddenly feel very dizzy or lightheaded. And that's a consequence of your blood pressure coming down a little bit. And, again, that's a response to taking a substantial amount of a water-soluble, vitamin.
Okay.
And so, again, just take DCI with plenty of water. That'll make sure you absorb it, and it'll help make sure you don't get a headache and don't get any of that dizziness.
See, I remember a lot of this stuff from my nutritional biochemistry class when I was in college,
Yeah. The
water-soluble vitamins. And these things, you can use for the rest of your life, this knowledge. This is great.
There's stuff you can use for the rest of your life. And actually, I think you and I actually talked about this once, that my absolute favorite set of electives when I was getting my degree was all my nutrition courses.
I didn't value it as much when I was there. However, this is stuff that's very useful, especially now that we have PCOS and nutrition is such a valuable part of or treatment.
Yeah.
Or maintaining balance. This is great.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody that's in college should take a nutrition class if they can.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Travis, we are extending an offer to the listeners of the PCOS Challenge radio show and also on our PCOSChallenge.com site and with Chiral Balance.
Yep.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so we're trying to encourage new customers, and we want to specifically offer some benefits to people that are, in support groups and that are active in the community. And so if you're placing an order with us and you register with us as a customer, you can use the coupon code PCOSChallengers, that's two words, PCOS just like you would expect, and Challengers just like you would expect for all those women out there challenging PCOS and taking up the PCOS challenge. And you can use that as a coupon code, and that'll get you a 15% discount on your first order. And even for current customers, you can all use it as well and get a 15% discount on your next order. So any individual registered customer can use it once for a 15% discount, and we're hoping that'll drive some new web traffic, because what we found is that last year we were, sales started to pick up enough that we were able to come down on our prices, and we're hoping to do that again hopefully around the same time as we did last year, so hopefully around December. And so the more people we can get interested in the product and the more regular customers we can get, the more we can lower that price to everybody.
That's wonderful. And, I encourage everyone to do the research. Travis gave us a wealth of information, but continue to do your research, and if you would like to take up the offer and start using DCI, 15% off is a great thing. Thank you very much, Travis, for doing that.
Guarantee on your first order. It's not, it's no real risk to you, and it's definitely not going to hurt you. So.
Absolutely. And if you could just tell us your website again and how to reach you.
Yeah, it's www.chiralbalance, that's chiralbalance.com. And the easiest way to reach me is at info@chiralbalance.com.
Okay, and how long will this offer be extended for?
We're going to at least until the end of June, and if it's effective, we'll keep it on longer.
Okay. All right, thank you. Thank you, Travis, for being on the show, and I certainly enjoyed having you. And the chat room members think that this is a great show. And thank you very much for your offer. I'll put all of this on the PCOSChallenge.com website
so they
can easily reach your website and your product.
All right,
thanks again, Travis.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the PCOS Challenge radio show. Tune in regularly to get insights from leading experts and the support you need. Also, be sure to join our social network at PCOSChallenge.com and sign up for our newsletter. This is Sasha Ati. Help spread the word and take the PCOS Challenge.